This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on human trafficking and modern slavery. I am joined by Senior International Barrister Felicity Gary QC, from Libertas Chambers in London. Felicity leads for the defence in the most serious and complex trials and appeals at every level of court, often with an international element, including appearing in a series of high-profile terrorism trials, challenging home assault trials, and appeals correcting errors of law in both murder and manslaughter. Felicity is also a professor of legal practice at Deakin University, where she lectures in modern slavery law and advanced international legal practice, and she has been recognised in the Legal 500 as a leading silk and as being fearless and independent-minded. Felicity, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. Hello.
It's lovely to see you on my Zoom, other side of my Zoom camera, as we call it. I sound like an old granny saying that, don't I? My Zoom camera.
We all do. Hello, Zoom. Yes, hello. I know.
Goodness gracious. Right. Okay. Goodness. I was saying to you just before we pressed record, wasn't I, that this is a serious area of law, human trafficking, modern slavery. And I have to say, when I was looking up statistics, when we were reading into this area of law, I felt really silly because I thought there's a lot I don't know. You know, according to statistics in 2016, at any given time, an estimated 40 million people worldwide were in modern slavery, including 24 million in forced labour, 15.4 million in forced marriage, and 70% of these are women and girls. One in four victims of modern slavery are children. Wow. I mean, honestly, that's why I felt so stupid, because I thought, this is really underreported. Underreported.
The exploitation of people is truly shocking globally, and publicity ends up being behind a whole load of other things. So trying to raise public awareness about difficult legal concepts is very difficult. And I think a lot of people think that slavery somehow disappeared when the transatlantic slave trade was abolished. So we hear about the abolition of slavery, and all that really did was make it no longer lawful to own a person. It didn't actually mean overnight everybody stopped enslaving people. It simply changed the law. And now the law has moved over the couple of hundred years to say, well, hang on a minute, if you do own someone or you're exploiting people, that's a criminal offence. And corporates have to look through their supply chains to see if there is exploitation of people. And there's a great deal of law on the exploitation of people in organised crime. But because these are complicated legal issues, they don't always make the front pages. The public aren't aware of the technicalities. And people are exploited in so many different situations that it's sort of quite hard to get your head around. So there's absolutely no need to feel stupid. It's a huge topic.
It is. It really is. And I know that we've talked about doing a podcast for corporate modern slavery as a separate podcast, which I think will also be really interesting and very eye-opening, I have to say. I've already looked at some of these stats on that, and that's quite interesting. But, I mean, of the 24 million people that I mentioned earlier, 16 million people exploited in the private sector, including domestic work, construction, agriculture. These are statistics. 4.8 million are victims of forced sexual exploitation, and 4 million people were in forced labour imposed by state authorities. So when we talk about what we mean by modern slavery and what types of acts fall into modern slavery, let's talk about that, Felicity, because like you say, I think there is this myth and stigma in our minds that modern slavery disappeared when it was no longer legal to own somebody with a piece of paper saying this is their ownership. So, well, you know, let's talk about that.
Really what happened was the development of to try and come up with a definition. And there is a definition in the UN Trafficking Protocol, which is a protocol to the UN Convention on Tackling Organised Crime. So it's always been recognised that people are exploited in criminal supply chains. It was really just a case of coming up with a definition that tries to encompass all of the ways in which people are enslaved. And it's that definition that is used when we try and think about how to tackle the exploitation of people. So it's really broken down into three areas. And the first is how people are trafficked. So that's recruitment, transportation, transfer, harbouring, or receipt of people. So in domestic servitude, for example, it's harbouring a slave within your house. In trafficking abroad, those people are exploited to carry drugs, for example. That might be transporting them overseas and so forth. The ways in which that is done in the definition, the means by which people are trafficked is through threats, use of force, coercion, abduction, fraud, deception, abuse of power, or a position of vulnerability. Now, that definition includes that position of vulnerability because it is well recognised and well researched that often it's people with no real choice in life in highly disadvantaged situations who are then exploited to carry out criminal activity and organised crime, or exploited to engage in forced labour, exploited in domestic servitude, and exploited in sexual trafficking. So the definition now is not just about the ownership of people, it's as wide as abuse of vulnerability. And it includes, for example, the giving or receiving of payments or benefits to achieve their consent, and essentially is about having control over other people for the purposes of exploiting them. And in that sense, the definition includes a range of exploitation. So that's prostitution, other forms of sexual exploitation, forced labour or services, slavery or practices similar to slavery. So you might have indentured servitude, and the is included is the removal of organs. So there's some pretty stories around trafficking bits of people as well as trafficking whole people. So it attempts to encompass all this horrific activity that's happening around the world, including in the UK.
That comes under modern slavery. I mean, there's no typical victim of slavery, isn't there? I mean, the victims are men, women, children of all ages, ethnicities and nationalities, cut across the population. And actually, in 2018, according to the National Crime Agency's National Referral Mechanism, potential victims of human trafficking reported from 130 different nationalities. That's worldwide, isn't it?
Yes, it is worldwide. And there's research to show that some countries have a higher level of what you call a source country. People come from those countries and are exploited abroad. So examples include, for example, Filipino maids who are exploited in the Middle East or exploited in rich households in London, if you like. And other countries are destination countries. So the examples I've just given, the destination would be London or the Middle East. But that, in a sense, hides how much is going on domestically. So in America, there's quite a lot of evidence of trafficking in road networks. So you have truckers traveling all over America in these enormous trucks. And there's some evidence of trafficking in truck stops, sexual exploitation at truck stops. Now, that's not to have a go at all truckers. It's simply that it's an example of where there is internal domestic, if you like, slavery or slavery-like practices or exploitation, sexual exploitation. Other examples include drug running, of course. Profits, huge profits are made through the exploitation of children in drug running. And that's been well recognised in the UK through what's called the County Lines investigations.
Where I was just going to say that, yes.
Yeah, it's anticipated that within drug networks, you're going to find an organisational structure, and at the bottom are trafficked persons, adults, children, and a lot of women and children.
Absolutely. And I mean, just to break that down, let's talk about the British people, and they're trafficked in many ways. And some of these include, you know, homeless people offered jobs that turn out to come with threats and without pay, teenagers who are groomed by gangs into criminal acts, as you quite rightly said, and also such as shoplifting, young people and adults coerced and manipulated to act as drug couriers and dealers, as you were saying as well, girls and women forced into prostitution by abusive partners or organised crime, and then the Country Lines. And actually, I never quite knew what that whole Country Lines gangs
meant. County Lines.
Where mobile phone numbers are used for different regions. I didn't actually know that that's simply what it meant by the County Lines gangs.
Yeah, look, the use of technology to exploit people is a whole other issue. But yes, the practical reality is people are exploited in a variety of ways. And unless the public understand this, and unless we have legal frameworks, you have that sort of knee-jerk reaction, the war on drugs, for example, which fails to differentiate the different roles that people play. So the easiest way to explain that is the Al Capone story. You're always looking to prosecute Al Capone, the head of the network. Beneath him, there's going to be managers and organisers and accountants. But right at the bottom are the runners who have no other position, no options, and are totally exploited, if you like, by the person at the top. So, you know, it makes for Hollywood movies to say, oh, we got Al Capone for tax evasion. But it isn't really a win, is it? That they never really prosecuted him for what were his known activities. And there's never a real story about what happened to all those people who were horribly exploited. And it's exactly the same now. That was largely during a particular era in American history. But we can certainly see how similar activities occur in drug running in the UK, in the exploitation of people in farming, agriculture, fishing,
domestic
all sorts
homes,
of areas.
Like you said. I mean,
domestic servitude, yes.
I think there's, and maybe we'll dedicate a whole podcast to myths, because when I started looking at what I thought were what I believed was probably correct, a lot of it were myths. For example, myths of how most people are trafficked. So I thought, well, they're smuggled in all the time. But again, in 2018, the Modern Slavery Helpline reported that most common methods of travel to the UK by potential victims were by plane. Second most common was bus or coach. Third was car, boat and lorry. And that most people came in with their own will, in the sense that it wasn't a smuggling sort of situation.
Yeah, there's a difference between the smuggling of migrants and human trafficking. And they are conceptually different. You know, there might be different ways in which people arrive, and some smuggled migrants may also be trafficked. So a couple of examples I can give you. A case I did as long ago as 2006 involved very vulnerable young Lithuanian girls from rural communities who were not savvy or streetwise at all, who were deceived into thinking they were going to get a better job, whose families thought they were going to get a better job. They were deceived by men they thought had become their boyfriends. They were transported to Heathrow on their own passports, with their own identity, willingly going to Heathrow Airport, where they're just handed over to traffickers, taken to a premises, all of their clothes and belongings removed, raped and forced into the sex industry, and no opportunity to identify themselves, or and in fear of running to the authorities, because of course they've got no paperwork, no proof of who they are. Fortunately, that was very well investigated, and I actually defended in that case, and there was an issue over whether or not my client was really a trafficked person as well as them. But the point being that it was a truly shocking circumstance, and We might think that that was voluntary, but it wasn't. It was an abuse of vulnerability. There wasn't any real voluntariness about that. They were deceived to come and to a job that didn't exist.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I don't think it is truly voluntary. And I've certainly published my views on whether or not those are voluntary, autonomous conduct by women. And then another example, quickly, in relation to a male defendant that I had in a case. So that was an allegation of a conspiracy to import illegal immigrants. So the idea, well, the basis of the conspiracy was that Indian men mostly were transported to Britain via South Africa on false passports to work in the rag trade in the Midlands. And there's huge exploitation in fast fashion, as we know. And the issue in that trial was he a conspirator, or was he the subject of indentured servitude, people paying for a better life and then having to repay that debt? Yes. And again, it's people with no other opportunities. What are you going to do? You're going to support your family. You're going to get on a plane or on a boat. So again, it's one of those examples of abuse of vulnerability. But you can start to see violence and sexual exploitation that can occur. So this isn't smuggled people. Yes. These people are openly coming because they've been threatened or forced, or their families are threatened or deceived, or they're just so vulnerable that that is a level of exploitation. And once you understand that, you can start to see that this isn't a system that should have an aggressive response. We shouldn't be locking up these minions who've been exploited. We shouldn't be filling prisons with very vulnerable people, or even deporting these very vulnerable people back into the hands of traffickers. We have to have a system that is capable of both prosecuting the traffickers, the genuine traffickers, and protecting the victims, even if those victims have committed a crime like drug running. And it's a real dilemma for justice systems. How does the justice system be both a prosecutor and a protector? And in England and Wales, certainly the law has developed to try and have policy and legal responses to attempt to reach that level of, in fact, there's three things that they have to do, which is prosecution, prevention, crime prevention, and that's why public awareness is important, and then protection of victims, that includes those who've been exploited in levels of crime. And we have to change our mindset to recognise those as victims of crime in the same way that there's a victim of whatever crime it is that they carry out. So it's quite a challenge to have a system that can react in that complex way.
I have to say, I think that's such an interesting point, because when we first had a discussion about this area of law, in my mind, I would never, ever have naturally had sympathy for somebody who was committing a crime, but they were the victim, in terms of they were coerced, they were, you know, pushed into that position, like you say, they had no other choice. And I have read stories where once people are here, or even if they are here and they're being used in modern slavery and human trafficking ways, that they threaten the family straight away. So these people really are pushed into a position of I've got no choice. And actually, you know, again, another sort of myth in my head where I thought, well, trafficking only affects foreigners. And in fact, more than a quarter of all victims of trafficking found in the UK last year were British citizens, 26%, making this the most common victim nationality here, followed by Albanian, which was 16%, and Vietnamese, which were 8%. And that, again, shocks me. And, you know, I do think that there is, oh, I said to you before we pressed record, there's so much to this area, because my mind is just going into 1,000 directions with the myths involved, with the fact that I now, having researched and read and finding out more and more on this area of law, do have compassion that have been coerced, tricked, and forcefully put into positions to commit crimes than I would have naturally had have done. And it goes back to that Al Capone story that you mentioned, where you said, you know, what actually happens to people at the bottom of that food chain? And I can't even imagine how the law starts to deal with this, because a crime is a crime, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. But it has. And in England, Wales, there have been some steps in the right direction. Not all the way there. But if we focus on the criminal law, step number one is we do have now offences of slavery and and human trafficking. So people can be prosecuted for carrying out this sort of behaviour. Now, think how far we've come. A couple of hundred years ago, it was lawful to own a person. Now yes. It's a crime to carry out that same activity. So that's taken a long time. But now we have offences, so we can prosecute traffickers. The problem is finding them, because people who know they are frightened and are coerced and have been abused and exploited. So that's number one. But we at least have a framework where when we find traffickers, we can prosecute. And whether that's in forced labour, so there's quite a lot of information around Asian people being used in cockle picking, for example. There was a cockle picking case some years ago in the UK that highlighted issues around trafficking and forced labour in agriculture and fishing. So we can prosecute people, and that isn't just faceless traffickers who are the Al Capones of this world. This can be employers who have suspicious and cruel employment practices. Other examples have been people kept in sheds on farms in slavery-like conditions and used to work in farming. And it's very hard to find them. You know, you don't have the police sort of tramping around everybody's fields to see if somebody's living in a shed. So it's very difficult. You need to create processes where those people themselves feel they have a safe avenue to complain.
And that's what I was going to say.
We've got quite a long way to go, yes.
Well, I was just going to say, do you think our UK legal system is geared up to help protect such individuals discreetly? That, you know, people who have been forced and coerced, first coerced and then forced into these awful, awful positions okay, the cockle picking individuals are not committing a crime probably, but you know, others that are committing a crime, in a robust way to give reassurances that, look, if you are in a position, a vulnerable position, and you are being abused, and it comes in many different forms, the UK legal system does offer some form of protection to you, even if you're committing a crime. What do you think about
that?
Yes,
it does. And the way in which it developed in England and Wales, very simply, is first of all, we discovered that we had prosecuted people who were in prison, who had committed crimes as a result of being trafficked. So they'd been compelled to commit that crime. And this was driven by the European Convention Against Human Trafficking and a trafficking directive. So we didn't really do it voluntarily, but we agreed to these legal mechanisms. And the trafficking directive in particular was directly effective on the UK. So we had to respond and say, what are we doing about this significant problem? So the first thing that happened was that appeals were brought, and the judges said, yes, this is the trafficking directive applies, we need to find a way. And there's this sort of weird policy response. Instead of saying these people are not voluntary, which I believe is the correct legal response, what the court said was, if this had been known about this person at the time that the prosecution was brought, they would not have been prosecuted. The policy now has developed to the point that they would have the Crown Prosecution Service would have said, no, we're not prosecuting that person, we'll assist them to get to a service. And that those mechanisms are available through the National Referral Mechanism. So whether or not that person's committed a crime, the first thing is there are services available, there are hotlines and so forth. But if they have committed a crime, they can appeal, and the court will quash their conviction on the basis they should never have been prosecuted, which is good. It's not quite legally accurate, in my opinion, but it's a good framework to have. In 2015, the UK legislated for the Modern Slavery Act, and that has really two parts. One is to deal with the criminal aspects, so prosecution and protection, and the other is the corporate aspect. So for today, focusing on the criminal aspects, again, there are a range of offences for prosecuting people who exploit others. So your cockle picking is an example. There's a range of prosecutions for gang masters and business owners who commit crimes, and those who force women in particular into sexual exploitation, which is horrendous when you read about what happens to women in those situations. And then in terms of protection, there is now what we call a complete defence. So again, instead of saying, well, this is not voluntary and therefore they're not guilty, we've got a specific framework that says if this person was compelled to commit this crime, and somebody in those circumstances would be compelled to commit that crime. I'm not reading you the exact legislation. I'm
That is very helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so what we say then is they can say, well, hang on a minute, I'm not guilty. And that allows, right from the beginning, for the police to treat them as a potentially trafficked person, for the national referral mechanism to be used, for the CPS to make a decision not to prosecute. But if all of that goes wrong, they can still raise it in a trial, a bit like self-defense. Okay, I did do the crime. I did travel with the drugs.
Yeah.
But I did it because I was compelled. I was a trafficked person. And that enables a jury to say guilty or not guilty of the crime.
And let me just make it absolutely clear. Sorry to stop you there, Felicity. I just want to make it absolutely clear. When we say human trafficking, it doesn't have to mean that you came from abroad or you were brought abroad. And that's a big, big myth. And I have to say, until I read that, I actually believed as well that trafficking meant you had to be brought into the country or you had to be brought out to another country. No, it means you're taken against your will from any single point to another point. So it can be within that country, within the vicinity. It doesn't mean from outside of the country or vicinity.
And yeah, or you're harboured. You could be kept somewhere. You don't necessarily have to move. But I think the way to think about that is when we say drug trafficking, we don't automatically think of drugs being brought from one country to another. We think of drug trafficking all over the place. So if we think of human trafficking in the same way, it's really the sale of people or the movement of people for money in the same way as a product. We're not treating them as human beings, we're treating them as products. So where someone is compelled to commit a crime as because they are a trafficked person, they are being trafficked to commit that crime, this defence allows obviously those decisions to be made in advance, so hopefully they're not prosecuted at all. But if those decisions fail, it allows a jury to bring in a not guilty verdict. Now, it's quite important to know that that doesn't apply to every single offence. And more serious offences, there's an exclusion. So to be a bit technical, the defence is in Section 45 of the Modern Slavery Act, but there's a whole list of offences that are excluded in Schedule 4 to the Modern Slavery Act. So murder, for example, there's no human trafficking defence to murder. Now, I don't think that that framework is necessarily correct because that focuses on the type of crime rather than whether the person was trafficked. And there are other countries that have complete defences for every crime.
Wow.
Yes, absolutely. If that person is a trafficked person, then they're not guilty regardless of what the crime is. There's a little bit of...
Even if it's murder?
Well, it doesn't say that it excludes murder. It's not been tested in murder in the countries that I've looked at. But if you think about murder, it's always interesting because it also excludes, in England and Wales, it also excludes accessories. Now, you can start to think that if someone somehow assists in a murder, let's say they dispose of the gun, just for the sake of argument, we can easily see how that person could be a trafficked person. Easily, they could be an exploited trafficked person. And yet, if they're found guilty of being an accessory to murder, they're actually convicted of murder because accessories are treated the same, and they'd get a life sentence. There's a mandatory life sentence. So excluding murder doesn't actually work, really, in my opinion, because it excludes all sorts of people who will have been exploited. But it's a big step for a justice system to take to say we're not going to prosecute people for murder. Now, I think it's important we recognise that at least people who kill their abuser are not murderers. They're usually prosecuted for manslaughter, for having some form of diminished responsibility or levels of loss of control. So why not have the same acceptance in relation to people who are trafficked. It reduces or removes their criminal responsibility because they're not voluntary. The answer to that is probably because we're still stuck with, well, there's no defence of following orders. But that was just a choice. That was a choice we made at Nuremberg to say, you're not going to have a defence of following orders. But what the human trafficking law says is, well, actually we do, because these people aren't really voluntarily following orders. These people are trafficked and compelled in a range of circumstances where we can see that they're not really criminals. Yeah. They don't have any level of responsibility. So it's a tough call to include something like murder, but it's pretty easy to see how it would be relevant in other crimes. So look, these are great steps in the UK to provide a mechanism whereby someone can come out with a not guilty, either because they're not prosecuted or because the jury understand their situation, and then they can be protected. They can go into protected services. So we don't just throw them out into the street at risk of being trafficked again.
Yes.
There are frameworks for
And I have to say, I would definitely like to talk about the frames of protection and actual avenues for people who could be in these unfortunate circumstances of how they get help. Where would they start? What would, you know, and I know it would be different for different types of crimes, but what would reporting these crimes look like? Where would they look to report these crimes? But, you know, that's all we've got time for today.
Yeah.
And look, it's just blown by.
Yeah, there's resources. There's a whole experts network for experts to do assessments. There's definitely plenty on the Crown Prosecution Service and police websites. I'm sure you can follow up with some resources. But
yes, that's absolutely a little
overview of an enormous topic that I think people are actually interested in. How do we not prosecute people? You have to change the message. It's not about prosecuting people and sending them to prison. It's about how do we not prosecute particularly vulnerable
people, victims, particularly
women and girls, particularly children. How do we make this change to our justice system to say, look, do you know what? We're going to recognise that those people are not criminals, not criminally responsible. They're not acting voluntarily. If there are some semblance of orders, it's because they've been abused to an appalling level. And the law continues to move forward. So we progress from lawfully owning people to it being a crime to do that, and it not being a crime for those persons who are enslaved to not a crime and not a penalty for what effectively
for something that they've been forced to do.
For the means and purposes of others.
Completely out of their control and in a vulnerable position.
Perfect.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate that. And that is a massively, massively great insight, I have to say. It certainly opened my mind up. And I just think that this is a massively, hugely underreported area of law. And the more we can talk about this area and break it down and go into certain segments of it, the more we can bring our listeners really interesting content. So thank you ever so much for your time.
You're welcome. I've enjoyed it. Thank you for the time.
Excellent. And what I will say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.